really helps us the most is when we have folks pitch in and a little bit or a lot or whatever you can give comes in monthly on a regular basis.
Hi, I'm Stan Raven. I used to be from somewhere else, but I'm not there anymore. And you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Please consider becoming a sustaining supporter today during our WGXC 10th anniversary pledge drive. Go to wgxc.org/donate or wavefarm.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. WGXC's 10th anniversary pledge drive as we're celebrating 10 years of bringing you community views and news and letting the community have access to one sliver of the airwaves. 90.7 FM is the only place on the dial that you'll hear your friends and neighbors conversing about local issues and having their say about what's important to them in their community on their local airwaves. If you think that's important and want to keep the community conversation ever present on 90.7 FM for another 10 years, please consider becoming a sustaining supporter today during our WGXC 10th anniversary pledge drive. Go to wgxc.org/donate or wavefarm.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Make a donation today at wgxc.org/donate. Become a sustaining supporter. And for just $5 a month, 17 cents a day, you can make sure and ensure that your friends and neighbors continue to have access to their own airwaves. And you can continue to hear them converse on your local dial at 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
Race Talks, hosted by intercultural communicator and author Kimberly Y. Irwin, provides expertise on the topic of race and ethnicity. With the national conversation over racial inequity in the media, ignorance or indifference is not a comfortable retreat. Listeners may converse with the host, other expert guest educators, activists, organizers, and thoughtful community members as they disseminate their knowledge, i.e., varying terminologies, historical realities, and current opportunities for engagement for a better informed, appreciative, and active local citizenry.
Join Ms. Irwin and her scheduled guest talkers as they share their stories to make sure that the ignorance of race, the evil of racism, and ignoble inequality which have shaped them, end and is not spread to another generation. Now.
Welcome. Now it's Kimberly Irwin. I'm your host for today or this evening at Race Talks, and I have three guest talkers today. We're going to start with a special guest talker, Mr. Garrett Roche. One of the reasons I invited Garrett on the show tonight was because he is also a WGXC programmer, and this is the 10th anniversary of WGXC 90.7 FM, and we are going to do a shout out to all of those people out there who are listening and want to see us continue on the station. and ask that you will please lend your support by just providing whatever you can to our station. But I'm not going to do that alone. That's why I'm inviting Garrett Roche. Garrett, I'm so glad to have met you, because you actually were the person who shared with me the idea of coming on the airwaves. Can you please introduce yourself to the audience again?
Indeed. My name is Garrett Roche. And first off, I'd like to say happy belated birthday, Kimberly. And thank you so much for having me. This is more than a pleasure and an honor. And I would also like to say, you just mentioned about the pledge drive and 10th anniversary. And what a perfect example this is of the community coming together. You inviting me on your show this evening, because we started off where you were a guest on my Monday morning show. And due to the pandemic, my show has been on pause, or as I say, host on hold. And now you have opened up this platform via Zoom. So I am able to once again have my voice on the air.
Well, yes, I want to definitely talk about why WGXC is so wonderful to have Race Talks, because when we met at a local place in Hudson, we were talking about race and ethnicity. Wasn't that a conversation that you remember having with me?
Yes, indeed. We connected initially on alignable.com, and then we met at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale on Warren Street.
And I was telling you how I was engaged in finishing a book on children's book on ending racism. There's only one race, the human one says me, which is actually the understanding of race talks being that there's one race and many ethnicities. And do you remember what you said to me around that time?
Positively. I had mentioned that your book just, your One Universal Media, when we connected on Alignable, first and foremost, just captured me. And it sounded very intriguing, your background and your business and such. And then when we sat down and discussed in depth, your book just captured me so much, because it's an extremely unique format laid out with simplicity, and including photographs to be promoted on race relations for children.
And with Black History Month being all of February, I definitely want the audience to know exactly what Black History Month is all about. So we're going to get into that. But I also wanted to share with the audience that we're going to be talking terms, because that's another thing that we talked about, Garrett, was about terminology. And we're going to talk about African-American versus Black. And we're going to hear that in some of the material that I prepared. And later on, with that, Black History Month, we're going to have another guest, who is Mr. Ernest Wood. He's a Hudson, I don't think we could say a Hudson alum, but he's not technically back, but he's on air now. And he's going to be talking about Black family cultural ties and the importance of education. And the last but not least person to be introduced today would be Mr. Mark Orton, who is a wonderful addition to Hudson. He and his wife, Karen, a beautiful, wonderful woman, and he on Warren Street, Lower Warren at that, have opened a gallery, and their displays and are so wonderful and very intercultural. And so he's going to come on, and I'm going to introduce him with a new debut that I've started at the show here, Code Words. So we're going to talk a little bit about Code Words, and we're going to introduce that with his talk on systemic racism and preparing very informative materials that could be offered to anyone who wants to delve more deeper into that conversation, that information. And hopefully, if I got it right, we're going to have a musical moment, a rendition of Glory. Garrett, I don't want to cut you off. I definitely want you to continue to stay in with the talk and continue to have a repertoire with us. But can you just share, maybe as a WGXC host and programmer, can you give a few seconds about what a person who wants to share their finances with us, where it would go.
I am beaming at the start. Positively, they can call area code 518-697-7400, or as a good majority do, they can go to wgxc.org/donate and click that red button. Or they can also go to, if they wish to mail their donation, or as many say overseas, post their donation, they can go to P.O. Box. I am right here with you in a moment. They can go to a P.O. Box, and it's the full address to mail their donation if they wish is WGXC, care of Wave Farm, P.O. Box 13, ACRA, that's A-C-R-A, New York, 12405.
Excellent. So we're going to keep you here because we're going to give that announcement again at the end of the show. But right now, let's talk about Black History Month. And Black History Month has a history in and of itself. And I've created this piece that actually is coming from one of HBCU, the Historical Black College and University, one of what they would consider an Ivy, a Black Ivy League institution. So here's a clip from a person who wrote this material for the government of the United States. So it should be wonderful. So we're going to talk about that with Ernest on the other side.
African American History Month. As a Harvard-trained historian, Carter G. Woodson, like W.E.B. Du Bois before him, believed that truth could not be denied and that reason would prevail over prejudice. His hopes to raise awareness of African Americans' contributions to civilization was realized when he and the organization he founded, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, ASNLH, conceived and announced Negro History Week in 1925. The event was first celebrated during a week in February 1926 that encompassed the birthdays of both Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. The response was overwhelming. Black history clubs sprang up, teachers demanded materials to instruct their pupils, and progressive whites, not simply white scholars and philanthropists, stepped forward to endorse the effort. By the time of Woodson's death in 1950, Negro History Week had become a central part of African American life and substantial progress had been made in bringing more Americans to appreciate the celebration. At mid-century, mayors of cities nationwide issued proclamations noting Negro History Week. The Black Awakening of the 1960s dramatically expanded the consciousness of African Americans about the importance of Black history, and the Civil Rights Movement focused Americans of all colors on the subject of the contributions of African Americans to our history and culture. The celebration was expanded to a month in 1976, the nation's bicentennial. President Gerald R. Ford urged Americans to seize the opportunity to honor the too often neglected accomplishments of Black Americans in every area of endeavor throughout our history. That year, 50 years after the first celebration, the association held the first African American History Month. By this time, the entire nation had come to recognize the importance of Black history in the drama of the American story. Since then, each American president has issued African American History Month proclamations. And the association, now the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, ASALH, continues to promote the study of Black history all year.
Excerpted from an essay by Daryl Michael Scott, Howard University, for the Association for the Study of African American Life and History.
Now, let's get back to the host and executive producer of Race Talks, Kimberly Y. Irwin, and her guest talkers for the evening.
Well, we're back. And I just think this is an appropriate time to introduce again, to let you know about Mr. Ernest Wood. Ernest C. Wood has his master in education and education who is an education administrator who currently resides and works in Ohio for Columbus City Schools. He's a Hudson High School graduate and comes from a long, large Hudson family lineage. I took the liberty, Mr. Wood, to go on your Facebook page, and I found something called that you wrote said, and it said, Spending June 10th in Louisville, Kentucky to honor Muhammad Ali was an overwhelming experience for me because I honor, respect, and appreciate his impact in the world of sports, the civil rights movement, and Black history. Mm-hmm. You went on to say, should you make the opportunity to visit Muhammad Ali in Louisville, please visit the Muhammad Ali Center. Now, the problem is I lived in Kentucky for a brief time in Bowling Green, and I didn't listen to you. So I'm going to have to go back, and maybe we can have a voyage back. But before you go into your conversation that we can converse with you about, there's a question I want to ask you, and it has to do with what we just heard about Black History Month. During that segment, they mentioned African American History Month as well as Black History Month. And we know that language changed. We know in the past we had Negro as the Negro Week. It went from Negro Week to Black History Month or African American History Month now. And we also had another term, colored. And that was an appropriate term. We had the NAACP, National Association, the National Advancement for the Association of Colored People, or the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I got it backwards there. So we know that terms change. This is a question for you. And I have to let the audience know, the listeners know, you didn't know about this question. So this is a little bit putting you on the spot, and I recognize it. But what do you prefer, Black or African-American?
I'm to be quite honest with you, I'm good with both. Yeah, I'm recognized. I go back a long way down in Hudson. I think it was on 3rd Street, Columbus and 3rd Street. There was a club there. It was called the CC Club. And that was a colored citizens club. And I grew up seeing that sign every day. but I truly enjoy being an African-American or a Black American because it's what I am. And I'm very proud of who I am. I'm Carter G. Woodson. Who is a frat brother of mine, Omega Sci Phi.
I was going to mention your fraternity, but I thought you would do it best.
phenomenal scholar, historian, and did a phenomenal job in getting the week ready. The week, which is now a month, has been a long time coming and growing. At one point when it first started, it was limited to just those who are of African descent, who would even acknowledge it, that we do have, this is about us this week. But it's so wonderful to see that we've come so far. I see the commercials now. The NFL is having commercials. I see the Cadillac, they're having commercials now. And just putting it out there, there are resources, a tremendous amount of resources that are available, because I think I feel sincerely that Black Americans, they're Americans, but even more so, more deeply Americans because of what they had to go through. You're talking about the civil rights. You're talking about the lynchings. You're talking about the killing. You talk about the, hey, I'm going over here. I'm going to fight for my country. And when I come back home for World War I, World War II, okay, Vietnam, everything's going to be A-okay, but it didn't happen that way. We were shut out of a lot of things, but you know what? We die for this country. We would do anything for our country. We love our country. And I can say that for all of us, because if we didn't, we wouldn't be here. But we're right here. We're here. We love who we are, but we also love our country. We love our country dearly, but as one
and we fought
say,
for our country. And
that's right. Yeah,
we want our country. We're Christmas addicts, right?
Yes. My thing is, I want our country to love us back, and I think that's where we are at this particular point in time, in trying to get recognized that we love our country, we have died for our country, but we need our country to love us back. And I'll share with you real quickly. I'm in education, but I didn't want to go into education when I was in school. It was my objective to be a fighter pilot. That's all I ever wanted to do. You could go into my room and you could see nothing but models behind, you know, and I worked for the town fair, for those of you who may remember
the town fair.
And I used to buy all the model planes. God bless him. He's no longer with us, but Arthur Kowick, a wonderful man, a great citizen of Hudson, New York. Love him like a father. I love his family. They've taken me in on many occasions, and I'm still very, very close to them, and I love them dearly. And I would definitely miss but the Kohick family is a phenomenal family, and I'll be the first one to shout that out and to let you know that. In college, I couldn't decide what I wanted to be. I was very disappointed. I even considered, I wanted to be an FBI agent. I wanted to guard the president. I didn't care who it was. I wanted to be able to guard the president. I was catching a bus. One of the campus buses is going back up the campus, and there was a little boy on the bus, two of them sitting behind a bus driver. And I must have been about 22 years old with my roommate, who was from Harlem. We sat in the back of the bus because we wanted to be in the back of the bus, not because we had to. We wanted to.
I know. We always do. We're in school. We like
We wanted to go back in the bus and sit down and just
all that fight.
We wouldn't put back there. But lo and behold, one of the little boys, and I would imagine at this time, I'm trying to reminisce, he was a second or third grader. The little boy got up out of his seat. He came into the back of the bus. He said, "Mister, will you help me with my work?" And to this day, I can always remember myself. I was working with him at mathematics and was regrouping. And I was really enjoying myself. He was taking his book back. He was yanking his book. And he said, "Okay, I get it. I get it. I got it." I said, okay, I'm sorry. So the little boy went back and sat down. So upon getting off the bus, my roommate, Malik, Michael Smith, God bless him, he looks at me and he says, "Jesus, did you see what happened?" And I won't use the words that exactly he said. It's so many words. He says, "Man, a little white kid walked past all those white people and came back there to black you and asked you for help with his homework, man. And you did a great job. You had to change your major." And the rest was history.
Okay, wait.
I want people to always remember that. That was a little white boy that got me started on my career.
How did that happen, though? I mean, I hear the story, but why would he go? Did he know you? Did I miss that?
No. This is this. You know, sometimes we say that you get certain signs and symbols come from above. That was one of them.
That was your aha moment.
Yes, it changed my career. The next day I changed my major to education, elementary education, thanks to that little young man. The only thing I will ever possibly regret is not being able to meet him today. And say thank you to him. What a blessing, huh?
I never
got a name. And I think about that often. Sometimes we like to look at children and say, "There's no color," but I would be fooling myself if I said that. That's not true. There is color because there's culture.
Right.
And there's three things that I've always learned that I take into the classroom, and it was teaching techniques and the information or the knowledge, whatever I studied in college. But then there was me, myself, who am I? And my experiences and so forth. And that carries a lot of weight when you go into the classroom and you want to help children and you want to do for children. And you want to be able to share that information and knowledge with them. But I just wanted to share that little story with you show my appreciation. But getting back to Black History Month, I'm excited. I think every day should be a Black History Day, or a week, or a month. It would be wonderful because there are still so many things that are overlooked and have not been recognized yet by the contributions and the things that people of color, both Black and Brown, have done here in this particular country to make it what it is today. It's not just about slavery, and this is what we hear all the time, and I kind of resent that now. I think that we've done so much more than that, and not to always hear that, we go up from slavery. Yes, we were there, but we have done so much to push the human race and the American race in the United States together. So that's my thoughts.
I want to definitely state that when you mention, you know, Black and brown people, the term I guess now is BIPOC, B-I-P-O-C. Mm-hmm. And there are National Heritage Days for those groups too, right? So you have the Asian group and the First Nation or Native American, and of course the Latino, Hispanic group.
And can I say something real quickly? Everyone who's listening tonight, go to those festivals. Please take the time and the effort to learn about other people's culture. It's about culture. We're not a melting pot. The United States is not a melting pot. We're more of a salad bar. We're more of a salad bar, you know. We are a salad bar. You got a little bit of this over here, a little bit of that over there.
Mark, are you hungry? No. I like the mosaic. I like
salad bar.
I'm in purple. This is a good segue. I'm in purple because, you know, Black power and strength comes from being regal in Africa. And so that's why I have my purple outfit on. For those who are present, wondering.
Omega Sci-Fi, we're purple and gold, so it's all good. So I walk around with it every day.
Okay, that's your frat.
Yes, it is.
I would like you to speak a little bit about your family in Hudson. And I'm going to mention that at the Hudson Area Library, of which both Mark and I are on the board, there is a history room. And they have wonderful projects and programs about families in Hudson, historical families in Hudson. And I'm thinking your family, and they're doing spots all the time. They did an Irwin family spot. And so I'm thinking we might, you know, have you and your family, because you have what, sisters still in Hudson, right?
One.
Oh, one. There were
six of us. There's four of us now. You know, two have gone home to be with the Lord. But there's four of us currently at this time. From a family perspective, I have my immediate family. I'm a member of the Cobbins clan. if I must say so. But and speaking about family. And coming out of Hudson, New York, I think it's important to recognize the fact that the community there was a family, and it was a large family for all of us. And I remember someone saying, "Little Ernie, is that you? I'm gonna tell your mom on you before you know." And I was scared to go home, you know. But but you had folks in the community would look out for us. But they would also be there for us in terms of our behavior, in terms of things that were witnessed or seen. But we were encompassed by folks who loved us and folks who took care of us. It didn't matter where we were. I mean, I grant you, I'm one of those individuals. If I heard that, I was scared to go home. And, but I knew I had to go home to meet my mom and, deal with the situation that took place at hand. But I remember the Cars, the Hugheses, big families. Huge families, the Van Alsteins. There's a lot of great families, the Fultons, great families, big families in the Hudson, the Brandos, good people. Excuse me if I leave out a name.
You're getting the
Ivories. but the a lot of wonderful the Colemans, a lot of wonderful, great people that we grew up with. Yes, definitely.
We're not going to mention them all, so we love you all.
No, I can't get them all in. I would like to, please forgive me. But they're just some wonderful individual and families, and growing up as a unit and a group and knowing each other was wonderful, and I really cherish that. It's when I go back home now, it's not the same. I think, it's my hometown, but if the people are not there, it makes it a little bit different. You know, you have to get to know things a little bit because the same people are not there anymore. But you can reminisce on the houses and the buildings that were there, and you know, the old firehouse on Front Street. Front Street was a favorite place for me to be. The train station. You know, I could catch a train to New York City at 6 a.m. I got on the train. I'm 14, 13 years old. Mom, I'll be home tonight. To get on the train, Hudson was in a very unique situation. And, you know, the Hudson River, a lot of life, a lot of things that took place there in terms of that whole area was our playground. That whole city there, and you know, we were all over it. What do they call it? The Clay Mountains. They still got the Clay Mountains down there doing things like that. So it was a very enjoyable childhood. I mean, one of the things I'd really remember is, you know, you could go to bed and not lock your door.
Right. And
yeah, how about that?
The thing about family, too.
Yes. Yes.
In Hudson, we had definitely segregation in the sense that you have places where Black people live, places where people who were Jewish lived, you had ethnic places for Italians and even Irish people here that I've been aware of. I didn't even know there was a difference between. You know,
oh yeah,
there's people live in a place where it's Italian. Oh, yeah. I just now found that out.
Well, so, something to keep in mind.
So when we look at Black history, looking at our lineage and we're looking at family, and that family is really important. And that, like you said earlier, it didn't even matter if it was your family. But anybody could call you out and say, get your butt home or something like that. We were all one family. And I'm glad that we were able to give a shout out to so many of the Hudsonian African-American / Black families.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to go on. There's a question that I want to bring up with you, but I think we're going to do it with Mark's section, because he brings up some of those questions in about how do we look at education and take out the racism that's in education. So I'm going to hold off asking that question until our talk. But in a segue to introducing Mark. Oh, he's back on. Okay, good.
Back on.
Yeah, so that he popped off for a minute. But I want to share with the audience and the people here who are on the line a photo. And this photo, if I can get this on the screen for everyone here, and I'll be descriptive of it. I am an alumni of Spelman College, which is an HBCU, and I also attended University of Penn. And Spelman Historical Black College and University was started by two white women. And the money that came from Rockefeller basically started the campus. And we went from six to eight young ladies that these two women brought in first with some funds coming from Boston. So they went from the East Coast into Georgia, the South there, and started a school primarily for, I mean, the desire was for African American girls, women. And the group that they got first were mostly illiterate. So they took these mostly illiterate people in 1881 and then started a school, which right now is number one on US News and World Reports for Black colleges and universities. So I just wanted to give a shout out to my alma mater, because this 2021 is my year for being an alumni, since I graduated in 1991, and we're celebrating that. But I also wanted to bring up UPenn, because in this picture, so I wanted to say that yes, and kind of like what you were saying, Ernest, we are Black people and we have a rich, wonderful history that doesn't always get talked about because we're so focused on the slavery part. But in this picture, we have of Old Penn. So University of Pennsylvania was started by a president, and in conjunction with President's Day, which was just last yesterday. And February is a host of President's Day. And one reason for President's Day being in February is because two of the president's birthday were in February. So, but one of them is Benjamin Franklin. Well, one of the people who started this school is Benjamin Franklin. And every year for about 60 years, they would have this big alumni gathering. And if you see this picture, I'm going to try to blow it up here, you see only white males, not even females. And next month is a month that will be honor and celebrate women. So, so this is very interesting for me because it would show me, and it says 1740, the annual dinner in the Society for the Alumni of the University of Pennsylvania. And it was taken in February 1909. And every, it's like 300 people if or more men here, and no women and no people of color that is visible. And so we've come a long way from this look, from this place, and to think that I would not have been able to go to school here. And yet now that we can say we have had progress. So I just want to read a couple of paragraphs. January 17th, the university recognizes the birthday of its founder, Benjamin Franklin. But more than a century ago, Penn used to celebrate the birth of another founding father. George Washington's birthday, February 22nd, had been a university holiday since at least 1826, before petering out in the 1930s. So I go there because one of the new segments I have is looking at codes, and we have MAGA that we've seen on our recent, our last president's hat. MAGA, which says states, what stands for Make America Great Again. And we as Black people that I've chatted with, we think, when has America been great? As great, you know, great again. We talked about slavery, we can talk about Jim Crow, we can talk about other other areas, eras of our American heritage. But I see this and I'm like, I don't think I would want to go back here because I wouldn't have been able to graduate from the University of Pennsylvania if we were back there. So when are we making America great again? So with that, we can have a conversation on that towards the end too, but I want to bring in my next guest, Mark Orton. And I have a few words I want to read about him. Mark is a blogger.
Kimberly, can I interrupt just for a second?
So sure. Actually, you can introduce yourself.
Okay. That picture is undoubtedly very interesting for white people because there's a whole history behind who the hell is white.
Well, before you speak, Mark. First, introduce yourself and then go right ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm curious to see what you make out of it.
Oh, no, I don't want to stop you. Okay, well, I'll be quick. Yeah. Blogger of American Delusions, no space. American Delusions, dedicated to conquer false beliefs and thereby enlighten the masses to take back their social and economic control, is Mark Orton, currently chairperson of the Board of Trustees of the Hudson Area Library. He and his wife, Karen, as I mentioned, relocated to Hudson, New York from Cambridge, Massachusetts in 2009 and are the proprietors of the Davis Orton Gallery on Lower Warren Street. With an extensive background in manufacturing, having worked as a machinist, engineer, and multiple management positions over 30 years, Mark remains involved in the business world working for a local software company. And one of the reasons why I brought in Mark to have a conversation about race is not because he plays tennis as frequently as possible, but I love tennis. And that's one of the conversations we had, Mark, is because one of the other conversation we had when we met and consequently thereafter was about race and ethnicity and your family having Black people in it, so to speak. So you could talk about that or your topic that I brought up, systemic racism, which We find also in education, one of those institutions, which is when I'm going to bring back Mr. Wood, but you know, I'm going to give the mic, so to speak, to you, Mark. So what do you want to talk about that picture?
Well, what I wanted to say is shortly after I quit graduate school in 1971, I started out being a machinist. And I was working in a machine shop in South Boston, which is an intensely Irish part of Boston. And there was an old machinist in his 70s, and he told me about the signs that used to appear in the Back Bay, which is the fancy part of Boston, that said, "No Irish." And and in fact, there's an entire history of what it means to be white. So back to that picture of all those grabs of UPenn, is you can be damn sure that almost all of them were English, French, German, Swedish, whatever. They were all Northern Europeans. No Irish need apply, nor Italians, nor Spanish, nor Greek. So it's an interesting little point about what whiteness means, you know, many of us white people weren't white.
Exactly.
In the culture in the United States. But let me just...
Well, I just want to add, yeah. Italians were considered a different race by the Greeks.
Oh, is that yes. Right. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about sort of what would be the kind of the pillars of our current kind of racial systems. So there are really three phases we can think about. There's the enslavement period, and then Jim Crow. Jim Crow kind of dies out in the its last official gasps and sometime in the 60s, but white supremacy did not go away. And you can see it in housing, education, the police and judicial system, healthcare, employment, and wealth and income. Mm-hmm. And those are the elements that I'm kind of interested in. And I'm not going to talk about most of them because I want to take kind of a quick segue to wealth and income. And some of this data is probably really well known. African Americans in 2018, the average family income was $41,000 versus $70,000 for whites. And then if you look at, and the unemployment rate for African Americans has always been twice whites. So anytime you see that number, you just double it and you're within spitting distance of whatever the conditions are. An interesting little factoid that I was surprised by is if you look at the bottom 25% of the population, the difference in earning between whites and blacks is 19%. Okay, so that sounds sort of familiar. But in the top 10% of earners, the difference is 34%. So in fact, I was surprised by that.
10%.
Yeah. But now let's just talk quickly about wealth and income, and then I'm going to have a little mental game to play. So wealth is a whole other issue. In 2016, the average white family had $150,000. I'm rounding these numbers off for convenience.
Thank you.
But they're very close to $150,000 in net worth, which is what do you have left after you paid off all your bills? Blacks had $13,000. But there's a crucial thing to understand here, and this is a segue into what I really want to talk about, is if you dissect that white wealth, you get a completely different picture. The top 10% of the population owns 70% of all the wealth. And I won't even talk about the top 1%. The next 40% own 29%. So what's that leave? That leaves 50% of the population owns 1% of the wealth. And in fact, many, many people in the bottom 50% have negative wealth. They owe more money than they have assets. So what I wanted to do now is to sort of play a little mental game, if we can, about the period between World War II and today. So 1945 and today. And if we break it up into two periods from the end of World War II to 1980, you see two numbers that are very interesting. One of them is productivity, which is how many dollars of output does each worker produce versus wages, okay? And over that period, so that's from 45 to 1980, productivity rose 100%. I'm rounding a little bit, but that's just for, so, but it went up enormous amount, 100%. And wages almost matched it. So the wages of everybody went up in parallel with the growth of productivity. Then 1980 to today, productivity goes up 70%, wow. But wages only go up 12%. Okay, so there's this huge gap. Essentially, for most of us, for our entire lives, we have had, if you're a wage earner, you've had, actually, it's the bottom 90% of the population, has had no pay increase in 40 years. So how did that happen? And this gets back to because we can't solve the issues of Black income and wealth without looking at the bigger picture. And in fact, it presents an interesting political opportunity, it seems to me, for the bottom 90% to get their act together and change the rules.
Yeah.
Because one of the things to be clear about is the economy we have is not an act of nature. It didn't come from God. It didn't come from some book at University of Chicago. It came from laws and regulations that were arranged to make rich and corporations richer. And so we need to change that. But let me just talk about one important thing and then I'll stop. In the 40 years that we've been talking about, the economy has become phenomenally concentrated. In other words, it's monopolization. And let me give you a couple of examples and it's virtually every market in the economy has become very, very concentrated. So in the beer market, there are three companies that control 75% of the market. In the cell phone market, three companies control 89%. In toilet paper, this one I liked a lot. In toilet paper.
That's why we've been getting toilet paper.
two companies control 78% of it. And one last number is hardware and building supplies. Two companies, which are represented here in the local area, Lowe's and Home Depot, they control 75% of all the building materials. So the economy is hugely concentrated, and this has led to, you know, all sorts of bad things: lower wages, lower job mobility, lower job benefits. There's less choice. You know, when you go into the supermarket, you think, my God, look at all this toothpaste. How many brands of toothpaste? Well, they're all manufactured by a couple of companies. So it's a sham. There's less innovation. You know, one of the things that American capitalists talk about all the time is how robust our small business economy is and stuff. In fact, the rate of new business formation in the last 20 years has dropped a half. So there are all these things that are going on, and I think it's you know, an important thing for us to think about while we're talking about, you know, housing. For instance, you know, I lived for almost 40 years in Cambridge, Mass, you know, a rich liberal you know, academic town with Harvard and MIT and so on. Well, they have exclusionary zoning in West Cambridge, so you can't build anything but a one-family house in West Cambridge. And this is typical of the kinds of nonsense that needs to be dealt with. And that is, in fact, part of the third phase. It's the post Jim Crow America, where and this is didn't just happen. You know, people talk about de facto segregation. Well, that's not what happened. The federal government and then private estate groups, local people, and the real estate and development industry created the housing situation we have today. You know, there's just a lot to chew on here, I guess I'll pause on that because I think I've chewed up my time. And as my grandchildren say, TMI, Grandpa.
Well, you had 1 minute left. Oh, it's gone.
It's okay. Yeah.
No, we are coming up on the time where we all are able to voice our, you know, ideas or thoughts and ask questions. So Mark, you have brought up such a, you know, rich information about really where systemic racism falls, and that's with the mighty dollar. Because slavery was started because of the mighty dollar or commerce. And even when we look to where America, you know, Puerto Rico or the Philippines and other places that America has coerced the residences to be in somewhat under the flag of the United States, was because their land was important to manufacturers in the United States. And then the presidents make those laws for them. And like you said, it's not by accident. These things right. don't happen by accident. It happens because there are people who want more wealth. And of course, America was started from our founding fathers wanting just that, coming from Europe to grab large land masses in the quote unquote new world. You know, people were still here at the time. So that is the case. And I wish we had more time so we can look to see, you know, maybe have a conversation. Maybe some right. of you right now on the line can talk about maybe what your thoughts are on how to better influence the future of this. I know that I actually have a link where Black young people at McDonald's in major cities in Chicago and New York City, they're coming out sometime this week, I think, and they're basically making a stand because they want $15 an hour. They're not right. waiting for the government to give it to them. So I think, and I have a link for that, and if someone's, I'll be posting that on my site because I was going to try to bring it up if we had time, but we don't. So I definitely want to say that. So that's one thing I would say is Black people and people of every ethnicity, if you have the wherewithal, make a stand, do something to support people getting a fair wage.
Right.
Anyone else on that topic or want to bring up something else?
Well, I think that was phenomenal. Your presentation, Mark, thank you. Mm-hmm. Extremely informative, the systematic, the way things are taking place. And just to add to that, and what you were saying also, Kimberly, is, you know, remember we had 9/11, we used to always say, if you see something, say something.
Right.
Right, by hitting the mark.
Right.
And we have to get to the point now in our country where not just people of color need to say it, but everybody, you need to step up. You see something wrong, you know it's wrong, say it's wrong. Right. and I'm looking for that change. We have got to step up to the plate. We're not doing that right now. Go ahead, Mark. I think you want to expound on that.
Yeah, I would just tag along about that. I've been kind of wandering around in my terms. I talked a long time about racism. And then I you know, partly because of things that happened at the library where we read James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, more about this. And that's why I've really talked now about white supremacy, because the issue that Baldwin brings up is there's not a Negro problem.
No,
it's a white problem.
And, yes.
And so I think that's why I've started to talk supremacy, because it really applies from 1519 to this moment. Yes. The background of you know many many policies and so on is how can we keep the white people on top, and then I'm sure there's a whole like which I don't understand and I don't think I ever will around the function of black people in white people's minds. You know, I'll leave that to other people. but yeah. So I would just add that on. I think I increasingly, you know, refer to all of this as the issue is white supremacy.
Yes, yes, and it's just the way. Real quickly, when I grew up in Hudson, and I remember going to the junior high school in Hudson, and I remember we were placed heterogeneously. You know, we had A, B, C, and in those A, B, and C, you had 1, 2, 3. And that's how we were situated. And you can imagine where A1 was the top group. And there was only one person of color there. But if you look at down to A, you go down to C, you would see all the students of color in 1, 2, and 3. And keeping in mind that, you know, C3 was those who were labeled as having some cultural, some special needs. And I don't like to use special ed, but like, you know, they had special needs and that's where they were. So we grew up in this type of environment and now we need to speak up. And we need to talk about what we see and we have to kick it to the curve and change things. So, but thank you tonight. I'd like to say that real quickly to Ms. Kimberly for inviting me. And well, it's been a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you for saying that. I just was going to say, you answered the question I was going to ask you about education is if there is one thing that we can do to try to take away institutional racism out of education. Mm-hmm. And what you just answered. Yes. That's something we can do. We can do that now.
You're part of the problem if you don't say anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think this is what Race Talks is about, is to help people find their voice and how they can converse in a positive way. It doesn't have to be combative. It's a conversation,
no.
Right? Yeah. And so you need to speak about it. Okay, Garrett, you have the last words before I play my favorite, my more recent favorite song that I'm going to have as a Black History moment. Usually it's Lift Every Voice and Sing, but we've heard that a lot. So I love Glory. So I'm going to go off with that. But last words about your show, anything you want to say? Yeah, 1 minute.
Thank you so much, dear Kimberly. And thank you to everyone tonight. I just want to say everyone hit on so many wonderful, fine-tuned, detailed points. And if we can keep up the positivity that we had on this broadcast this evening, the best years of our lives will be ahead. And also, I'd like to thank you, Kimberly, in assisting me with my own podcast website in the last several months. Anyone is welcome to go to theroachsolidtruth.com. That's theroachsolidtruth.com. And it's just absolutely astounding, this connection this evening, and how I cannot wait till the studio reopens and I'm back in front of that microphone on the Monday morning show. But in the meantime, I cannot thank you enough for this opportunity, Kimberly. And again, please, anyone listening out there, donate.
Donate to WDXC. You know where to go online. Go to my social media pages. You will find a link. And right now we're going to end Race Talks for February with Glory. Watch us next month on Race Talks, third Tuesday of the month at 7 p.m.
Thanks.
Pleasure. I look forward to meeting you when I come down to Hudson.
I was never able to find a bra
whoops
that fits my small chest. For as long as I can remember, being small was something to be in. One day.
When the glory comes,
it'll be ours. It'll be ours. Oh, one day when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against. Yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion.